News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5-807 on Mobile Mornings. And Councilman Ben Reynolds due in studio, we should say, a little after 8:30 this morning. So he'll be coming in at that time, and we look forward to talking to him then about his run again. This is his first re-election attempt in council, Council District 4.
Yeah, and that'll be coming up just after 8:30. We are now within 2 weeks from the municipal elections on both sides of the bay, and we'll have our FM Talk 106.5 mayoral debate tomorrow during midday Mobile live from the Business Expo. So really hope that you guys are able to make it out there and see it in person, or if not, listen on the radio. But beyond that, always love hanging out at the Business Expo each year because we get to see so many of you and have some great conversations. So looking forward to that.
It is fun every year, and tomorrow we're just kind of, you know, doubling up on that fun or excitement, whatever you want to call it, because I think a lot of people are going to be very interested in what we're doing, not just those listening on the air, obviously. You can hear that debate among the four mayoral candidates. But being down there live and watching the crowd interact, and then they'll be able to watch the debate live. And you've worked really hard to make sure engineering-wise we're good to go down there.
No, I had no part in that. So if you can't put my name on it. That way, if something does go wrong, I can be like, wow, that was crazy. Who set that up?
You know, it reminded me of the Little Rascals when they're trying to set up, do something elaborate, like a stage show or something like that, and they're able to pull it off, but it's like rubber bands and tape and everything like that. That you were like Spanky yesterday trying to get us all set to go, but it should be fun.
I mean,
the Business Expo, it is, again, sponsored by the Chamber of Commerce, and it's a lot of fun every year. It's a great opportunity to meet people and to get your business out there. And tomorrow, more than that, we'll have that debate tomorrow that we're producing, and looking forward to it.
Yeah, sure are. Speaking of debates, I had one last night down in Orange Beach. I was wondering how many people would actually show up because the free tickets just kept getting sold out.
Yep.
One batch after another. And they ended up holding it, and Erica Thomas with 1819 News. Who better to report on the debate than Erica, but with 1819 hosting the event. So you had Mayor Tony Kennan, the incumbent. You have the challenger, who is Councilman Jeff Boyd, who was also in attendance. It was those two going after each other.
And they claim, or there has been a claim, that they're friends and have been friends for a long time. Boyd said as much on the Jeff Poor show about a month back, but I think at this point now you might be able to dispute that a little bit.
Yeah, so Jeff was the moderator, and he was front and center. I didn't watch it live, and when it does make its way out onto video or audio, we'll listen to it then. Jeff was obviously there. He'll give us the rundown from his POV. But just from their comments that Erica writes about here, Boyd, after the debate, said, "I thought it went great. I got to speak my mind, got to tell where my real pain points are, and I got to let people see why I'm running for office in Orange Beach, why I think I can do a much better job." Now, the question I think everyone who was going and who didn't make it up there would have is, well, how down and dirty did this debate get? I mean, did they get into the personal lives of each other? Did the reporting on Kennan maybe come up during the debate? And it sure seems like it did. Kennan said, "I felt like tonight went essentially as I thought it would. We had rules, and I thought everybody tried to stick to them except my opponent. He wanted to go off into the sleaze factor, which we'd agreed not to do because you can't really defend yourself in 2 minutes, but that's okay. I think people saw it for what it was and see that it's a coordinated, orchestrated, muscling sleaze campaign." That was from the comments from the incumbent mayor, Tony Kennan, after the debate.
I think the idea that there would be some sleaze factor, as he calls it there, or a review of the facts, as other people would call it, you know, that's why there were so many people there.
Definitely.
If they were just going to talk about red lights and moving sand around, that would not have generated that kind of attention.
No, because you had people coming from other cities that aren't even voting in this.
You had between 1,200 and 1,500 there in a city that only has 8,000 residents. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, there were people from other municipalities there, too, just kind of sticking their neck in through the window.
Oh.
What's going on here?
Yeah.
And if there wasn't, at least not a guarantee, but an idea that some of this was going to get a little dirty, the crowd would not have been like that. And also, I got to say, yesterday, again, there was another drum beat pounding from Lanyap, another story about Tony Kinnon from 2011.
Yeah, the bus going to or leaving Live Bait.
Yeah.
The fight that occurred on the bus.
Right. And it didn't even, as the victim in the fight kind of reported it, it looked pretty, you know.
One-sided.
You can read it yourself. It doesn't seem like there was really a fight as much as there was a punch. But from his point of view, it doesn't look good on Tony Kinnon from his point of view. And you can read that story again in Lanyap. And he's got to feel at this point like there is some orchestration to this.
Well, yeah, and you can see why it's so frustrating to Kinnon. And, you know, maybe it should be frustrating for him, because this is something also that happened 15 years ago.
Right.
He's got to be thinking, man, we're 2 weeks from the election.
Yeah.
we're going to bring this up now. So with their opening statements, and this is all from Erica Thomas, who did great job covering it, as always. Boyd was first up. He said, "My platform is faith, freedom, and family. I stand on my faith. It's the number one thing in my life, and I'm proud of it. Your families are what make this city." And then Kinnon, in his opening statement, "I consider myself a businessman and a public servant. I make my decisions based on common sense, logic, reason, facts, and numbers." He said, "Votes, favorites, politics, doesn't matter to me. Everything revolves around enhanced quality of life." Erica says, Jeff, the moderator, Jeff Poor, asked about infrastructure and growth, schools, the candidate's stances on important issues, annexations, roadways and bridges, finances, and public safety. Kinnon said he's a diplomat and a statesman when necessary, but he's also a bulldog when he has to be. And then it sounds like that's kind of where the debate turned. Boyd said he has witnessed Kinnon going on tirades when things don't go his way. Boyd said he would handle business differently. And here's the quote from Boyd. "I can sit here and listen to this. Guys, I wouldn't be here if I didn't think these were lies. Y'all know what's out there. You know how many questions. You want to go talk to people? Go talk to the police department alone." Boyd continued, "Get them by their side asking the truth. There's guys all over that police department that are scared to death of their job and they don't know what to say." He continued, "If you're going to hold the standard of the police department, I mean, you want to talk about a second office. If any other employee in this city would have been at that office at 1 o'clock in the morning, they'd have been fired on the spot." He said, "Where's the double standard? I don't get invited to that office. I'm here today to show you I care about this city. I care about our school, our traffic, our growth." So in closing, Kinnon, who it doesn't sound like he really referenced what Boyd was talking about there much at all, said, "We are a sanctuary city for families and family values. Our neighborhoods are our sanctuaries, and we have sought to protect them for 17 years. He said, "Our community is a community of God-fearing, gun-toting, constant touching, defending American patriots."
I'm not even going to try to interpret all that.
"We are the Mayberry at the beach," which is a cool line, and I think he's used it plenty of times. "We have issues to deal with. I understand that. We have growth, but we cannot let growth change us or turn us into something we're not. Everyone is welcome here, but don't come here and try to change us." And Erica wraps up her article saying, "The debate became heated at times, but both candidates were pleased with the opportunity to speak to voters." Kinnon said, "I think it was great to be able to rebut. I think 18-19 was very, very fair in what you did, and I think it was needed. Sometimes the facts are difficult. They're painful. I don't want to be speaking them. But if the people don't see that and don't know it, they need to know it before they choose their next mayor." And Boyd wrapped it up here, said, "I don't know if I did a good job, but I know that it was run very well. Jeff Poor did a great job. He was very fair, and it was a great event. I can't complain about it in any way, form, or fashion." So that's the roundup from Erica Thomas. I'd love to hear from
you. It's a good roundup.
Yeah.
And I like that they were very complimentary of Jeff, who was – that's not an easy spot to be in a contest this –
mm-hmm.
contested, you know, where you know there's going to be possible hard feelings. Yeah. So Tony Kinnon described himself basically like part Patrick Henry, part Manny Pacquiao.
A little bit.
And it's hard to, you know, when you, yes, it was 14 years ago, the incident in 2011, but it happened. And then when you see the reports, or at least the story, there seems to be, I don't know, Lanyap even asked, is there a pattern of things like this happening? I don't know, but I've heard, we've all heard of more than one event like the fight on the
bus.
On the bus. There was also an incident, I believe, that's been rumored at Floribama, mm-hmm. too. So, you know, it's a high-profile job because it doesn't have to be a high-profile job because Kraft and Gulf Shores, he's not a high-profile mayor.
No, he keeps his head down a lot.
He does. I
mean, obviously, so, he's still in a bunch of stories because he's the mayor of Gulf Shores.
Exactly. But
people like that, too.
Yeah,
I mean, like a fighter.
Well, that's fine. That's fine. And I thought he was really good when the BP oil spill happened. I thought he was standing up for that community. Great.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked his action because in Mobile, I was noticing inaction. Although, to be fair, I believe Sam Jones was sick at the time, had some cancer issues he was dealing with. But there was kind of silence out of the government plaza in mm-hmm. Mobile, whereas at that time, you know, there was a long period of time there. We didn't know what was going to go on, right? They hadn't capped it, and it was going on for months.
Yeah.
And so there was a lot of
businesses that went down,
yeah,
you know, obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
Our seafood.
Right.
Completely.
Right.
Took a major, major hit from that. But I think that's, you know, that kind of plays into it, too. Being the mayor of a beach community, of a community like Orange Beach, that is some high value property that they're sitting on right
sure.
there.
Yeah.
And I kind of think of the show Yellowstone or some of these others where you have a prime piece of property and the government wants in on it. Private developers want in on it. Casinos went in on it. The partying. I mean, just think down the road at Panama City Beach, what that could be and yeah. what it has become over the years.
Because of the decisions made by leadership.
Right.
Panama City did it all wrong, as it turns out, inviting MTV in. And then, mm-hmm. and then things just got too loose, too quick, and it was difficult for them to figure out how to put the genie back in the bottle.
Yeah, they could be sitting on their own kind of Sandestin down there in Panama City Beach, mm-hmm. but they're not.
Yep.
And I don't know how long it would take them to turn that around. Maybe you're somebody who goes to PCB often. You say, hey, it's still a great family town, and we're able to do this and that. But that's not the perception for sure. So just think Orange Beach. I think a lot of people who aren't as vocal or as ready to go to the mat as Tony Kennan appreciate that he is, because he's kind of like having that guard dog there. If you want to keep Orange Beach similar to the, I know you can't keep it the way it was.
Yeah.
That's impossible at this point. And that's obvious with the developments and how the wharf is coming along. But if you want those values to last as long as they possibly can, I mean, you had Tony Kennan out there shouting about, what was that, Jackass Coffee or whatever they were talking about moving to the mm-hmm. beach. And we were all kind of cracking jokes like, come on, man, it's just a coffee shop. But a lot of people appreciate that kind of rabid kind of at your neck. No, you're not bringing those values into our city. And no, we're not going to let the casino. And I don't know where he stands on the whole casinos thing. But and that so often is in the hands of the state legislators, obviously. But he strikes me as a guy who doesn't want casinos down there either.
No,
he's willing
I don't think so.
Fight to the final.
If he doesn't want a coffee shop that's called Jackass or whatever, he doesn't want a casino.
Right.
Because that'd be, I mean, you are inviting all kinds of trouble with that.
And so I know a ton of people are really upset with him. And the reporting in Lanyap, which is pretty devastating and pretty, I mean, they come with the facts and a lot of that. But so many people are willing to overlook that because they say, hey, he might be a dog, but he's our dog.
Yeah.
And he's fighting for what we believe in.
I think there's some of that, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so somebody with the leadership style of Tony Kennan, you can imagine he's come to the rescue or to he's done things that people appreciated, not just widely, like the whole community, but maybe a guy here or a guy there, somebody's getting jerked around with some sort of a ordinance and he's able to walk in and straighten it out.
Yeah.
Well, if that happens to you personally, you're going to vote for that guy.
Mm-hmm.
He had your back in an incident that was big to maybe not everybody, but might have been big to you. He looks like a guy that can do stuff like that mm-hmm. or prefers to do things like that. And that's ingratiating. That makes people say, he can have a bad night.
Yeah.
I'm not worried about that. I'm worried about the guy who's going to have my back when I need my mayor responding to what I need, and maybe in a, how I think I'm feeling like I'm being treated unjustly, I need that guy to take up for me, at least hear me out.
Yeah, and so many similarities, obviously, to the president, and I know it's apples to oranges, but when people run these headlines about Trump, like, strong-arming India or something and think that we're going to be upset about it, and it's like, no, that's what we like about him. He's going to go in and tell them how he feels and how America feels, and this is what needs to happen. And people are able to overlook, you know, personal parts of people's lives depending on how they fight for them
exactly.
when it matters.
Exactly.
And that's, I think, what Kennan has, that's what he's running on, right?
Yeah.
Is his past as mayor. Do you like what's become of Orange Beach? Would you like it to continue in this direction? If not, there's someone else up here on the stage with him.
Yeah, and a town that size, they've all had, he's within, and his style, in a town that size, he's very accessible. Everybody in the town knows him, knows who he is, and I think, again, that people like that.
Mm-hmm.
People like that. So we'll see. We'll talk to Jeff about it, get his take at the end of the hour.
That'll be good. 822 right now, 251-343-0106. That's the number if you want to hop on the text line or phone line as Mobile Mornings rolls on.
Also, why did Zelensky not get invited to the party in Alaska? We'll let you know on the way. Morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5. It's 827. By the way, Carolyn Levick cleared some up yesterday, saying that the president is agreeing to the meeting at the request of President Putin. So since Putin gave the invitation and Zelensky wasn't invited, part of that invitation, that's why Trump is, it's just the two of them.
Ah, okay.
So now you know, but in the end, of course, they're all going to get together. Ben Reynolds joins us a couple of minutes early, so we just wanted to stick a microphone in your face and let's do this thing. How are you, man?
I'm doing great. Thank you all for having me. Great
yes, sir.
To be in the studio again.
So we're within 2 weeks now of the municipals, and we were just spent the last segment talking about the mayoral race in Orange Beach, which some mud flying there. But we were, as you came in, kind of saying, you know, on this side of the bay, we have a lot of races, but everybody's been pretty respectful to this point, it seems, in pretty much all the races. I mean, there's little jibs and jabs here and there that people get kind of frustrated with, but nothing over the top, it doesn't seem.
That's the way it seems to me, you know, and maybe that's attributable to where we're at as a city, that we're sort of moving forward in a very good direction, and I think people are generally happy with the direction we're going. There's obviously uncertainty with a change in administration that's always going to create some turmoil, but I think you're right.
Yeah, and speaking of the work that's been done in this city, a lot of it happening in your district, and a lot of roads paved in District 4, huh?
A tremendous amount, and this term alone, we've resurfaced or funded over 50 miles of roads, which is sort of unheard of. I don't know that that's ever happened for a single city council person.
It's a lot.
It is a tremendous amount, and it takes a lot of hard work, and it takes a lot of hard, tough conversations when somebody says, hey, look, we want this new shiny thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's we got to put that to the side and say, look, we've got to focus on our infrastructure. We cannot continue down the road of doing the big, fancy projects. We have to get the infrastructure right.
Yeah. Okay.
We're gonna go to a break here soon. Well, we can get to some of those fancy projects after the break, too.
Yeah.
Because there's big stuff in your district's future, too.
Absolutely there is. And, you know, we just broke ground on a brand new fire station, a $4.6 million fire station over on Azalea Road. And that was a fire station that's 68 years old.
Wow.
And the District 4 CIP capital improvement money, we put in $2 million to make that happen. And that represents the largest investment by a city council CIP into public safety ever.
Mm. Wow. That's big news.
In the history of Mobile?
I'm sorry, I said
in the history of the city.
And yeah, that's right. Since the capital improvement program's been around.
We had that ribbon cutting earlier this week.
Groundbreaking. The ribbon cuttings are better. Right. You know, we enjoy the ribbon cuttings, but the groundbreaking was this last week.
Yeah. I would, you know, when it comes to the groundbreaking, I like groundbreakings, but I always want to live long enough to see the ribbon cutting. It's 8:30, FM Talk 106.5 in Mobile Mornings.
Hope you're being careful out there. Sounds like we have some pretty rough stuff on the roadways, and that 65 southbound I-10 eastbound, serious situation right now. So just be careful if you're driving around. It is a Wednesday. Right now it's time to head to McConnell Automotive and talk with Louie Arata. Hey, Louie.
Hey, good morning, guys.
So a lot of rain, and we've discussed this so many times over the years. Rain means accidents, sometimes just little fender benders, but whatever harms your vehicle, you can always bring it into McConnell Automotive in the body shop.
That's right. Just remember Rachel. She will take care of all your needs. Their number back there is 251-476-4141. That's right. And if you have that unfortunate accident, just give her a call, man. We got great body shop back there. And we've got a great selection of used cars and new cars. If you're looking for a vehicle, if that vehicle's totaled or something, check out our website, McConnellAutomotive.com, and you can give us a call, 251-476-4141. If you see something you like, and just come by and see us.
Yeah, it's that easy. We appreciate it, Louie.
Hey, thank y'all. Come see us.
That's Louie Arata. Go see him. McConnell Automotive on Dauphin Street, just east of I-65. The website, McConnellAutomotive.com.
8:35, Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, and Ben Reynolds, the sitting Mobile City Council District 4 councilman. Ben, good to have you again in the studio.
It's always a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, man.
So rain is the topic again this morning, and it seems every time we have a rain, I mean, I'm not breaking any news here, we see sewage overflows, we see problems. That happens when you're in a city this old and old infrastructure under the ground. But obviously there's been a concerted effort for years from the city to fix this widespread problem. What are those discussions like? And I guess, do they ramp up after big rains like we apparently had over on the Eastern Shore overnight somewhat here in Mobile? What are those conversations like at city council meetings about flooding and stormwater management? And then specifically with your district, how have you gone about that?
Those conversations are typically difficult conversations, because what we find out when we sit down with the engineer is that there's a tremendous amount of demand for infrastructure improvements for stormwater, whether the money has not been allocated to do it. I mean, it's sort of not very popular, we've seen over the years, for you to take, say, $10, $20 million and put it in a ditch, and then everybody, once it's completed, doesn't even know anything's done. The only time you see it is after a big, heavy rain. So I've sort of tried to turn everybody's attention to that being a requirement of government, that that's the primary goal of what we should be doing. That's where we should be spending our money. And when we have these big rain events, it's kind of like you put on your fireman's hat, and everybody goes out and sort of patches all the problems and, you know, just does the best they can. But we have to have a bigger vision, long-term planning of how we're going to tackle this significant problem of drainage. So what I do is, in the capital improvement funds, I try to allocate every other year about $2 million or so to repairing ditches, and, you know, trying to partner that money with some bigger grant funds so that we can tackle sort of our big area to the south. And everything that, if a drop of water hits the ground up here at Airport and 65, if it's on the west side of I-65, that water is going to go down to Halls Mill Creek. If it's on the east side, it's going to go down to the further to the east of Dog River. So it's all coming to us. So fortunately, I've gotten the city's attention to say, if we're going to start fixing drainage, we need to start at the bottom and work our way up.
Saw somebody post online a picture of the litter getter. I don't know which one they got a picture of, but they didn't know what it was, and they were asking people, you know, what. And a lot of people here in Mobile clued them in. They said, that's a litter getter. You won't believe how much litter we used to have in some of these different waterways. That's, you talk about something that's been under-discussed. The litter getters, I think, have been great these last, I don't know how long they've been in, 5 years, 10 years almost, maybe?
It's over five, I believe. So 4 years ago when I was running for office, I went out with the guy who does it, or the group. It's called Osprey Initiative. And I went out and rode around and saw the litter, the legacy litter, stuff that's real way far back in the grass where you have to essentially get out and hand-pick it. And we looked at the litter traps. I guess 2 weeks ago, I went and rode with him again, and we went and all, went through the rivers, and it has been a tremendous improvement from where it was 4 years ago to today. And we're going to be putting out a video here in the next week or so, sort of trying to explain all this work that's been happening, and it's been a fantastic contract with Osprey Initiative, and they're sort of the Navy SEALs of litter. They know it.
You know, when you came into office, I know you were very prepared for it. You prepared for the office by kind of overseeing, I guess, reviewing or watching council meetings happen for a number of years, right? So way before you ever even had the were running for office, you were prepared and understood the way it all went down and what your role would be.
Absolutely. So I had the fantastic opportunity. You know, I don't look at this as I chose to do this job. I feel like I was picked to do this mm-hmm. job, or my number was called. So I was working with former councilman John Williams while he was still in office, and I was doing a tremendous amount of reading and studying and, you know, having discussions with him and debates with him, you know, about what the right thing is or what I thought the right thing was. So that carried forward into the office and made that transition from him to me very smooth, and I was prepared on day one. And I'm still just as diligent, if not more, now that I've been in the job for 4 years.
So one of the first things you tackled was one of the biggest problems there is, and that's homelessness. And you were in the news immediately because of trying to pass laws about camping and all this kind of thing. And obviously was trying to target what we see as this still growing problem of homelessness, not just, but primarily in your district and in Mobile. What's next? What's the solution?
Yeah, so I did introduce an anti-camping ordinance that you couldn't camp on public rights of way, and it just provoked this tremendous outcry from homeless advocates, mm-hmm. the Southern Poverty Law Center, the ACLU, and we had the house packed, you know, down there week after week after week. We didn't get the outcome we wanted in getting the votes to get it to pass, but what it did do was raise everybody's awareness mm-hmm. to the issue, and then sort of start identifying what are the real problems and how do we go about addressing them. So in response to all of that, the city hired a homeless prevention coordinator. They hired a mental health advocate to get involved. They entered into a contract with Ransom Ministries to get these folks that are willing or wanting to work to go and pick up litter and eventually can find a path to working for the city. We passed an aggressive panhandling ordinance. We passed an ordinance regarding sleeping in parks, mm-hmm. and you know there we allocated $2.2 million from opioid funds to the problem. So what we found is that we're providing services at a pretty good tick, and we've got a better handle on the problems. But what I think is the city is not doing an effective enough job at enforcing the vagrancy, because we're not necessarily talking about homeless. We're talking about vagrancy. Mm-hmm. And so we've worked with our state partners. Fortunately, they have passed a new law for us that will go into effect October 1st, where the city can access private property to abate a public nuisance such as junk and litter. And that's where a lot of the problem exists, is on private property. Mm-hmm. They're sort of have this place where they can go hide and avoid the, you know, the norms of society.
Yep. Yeah. And I don't think about it all the time, but in so many ways, local leaders, you know, city council members, you're kind of bound so often by state and federal law that it's interesting, and it's great to see when you guys are able to have some conversations with state officials or federal officials at times and say, hey, this is what's important to my district specifically, but my city. And then this is what we would like to see change, because it isn't all the time where the city council can just make a vote, snap your fingers, and that thing happens. There's so many other layers to it that you're kind of trying to dance around or through as a city council.
Yeah, there is no magic wand. And I know a lot of people think there is, where you call me and I can just resolve all the problems, but that's just not how it works. But, you know, this job is a relationship. This is a relationship business in the political sphere, you know, that you can pick up the phone and call your state representatives or people you have relationships with or interacted with on this issue or that. And that's why it's so important to keep that continuity from one term to the next, so that you don't sort of set yourself back where you have to start back over from scratch.
Mm-hmm. How about to this council? How does it get along? How do you guys work together? Because in the past, we've seen when council was not they were not a troop of Boy Scouts all on the same page.
I'd say let the record speak for itself. I think this city council has been the most productive and most successful city council that I can recall in my life. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there are times where you have you butt heads or whatever, but we work through it, and that's part of the democratic process. You know, you just work through it and figure out, you know, where we need to land, and you don't always get what you want. You sometimes have to take half a loaf, as Councilman Dave's like to say, and but I think we've been very successful. We work very well together, and I would enjoy working with everybody again.
So let's talk about District 4 a little bit more while we have you on. You're running for re-election, obviously. You feel, I don't know if satisfied would be the right word, but you've done a lot in your time in council. Talk about some of the wins you feel you have since you've been in office and what you want to see with District 4 if you were to win re-election.
It's sometimes, I see it in these in the campaign, that everybody wants to harp on the negative, but there is tremendous amount of positive that's been going on in District 4 and the city as a whole. We've seen tremendous amount of growth with new businesses coming in. Even, you know, to Tillman's Corner, substantial amount of businesses coming in, and everybody wants to talk about the negative part of it, but you know, there's been an Aldi that's come in. There's Whataburger and Chick-fil-A, Chipotle are on the way. We got the candy store is, you know, now torn down, and we've seen Topgolf come in. We've seen Dave and Buster's come in. There's a lot of demand for businesses to relocate to the center of the city, which is District 4.
Yeah,
you know, the biggest successes are the most boring successes, because that is truly my focus, and that is to resurface roads. I mean, it is truly remarkable to have resurfaced over 50 miles of roads, and to build a brand new fire station, and to put in millions of dollars in improving ditches that when we have these big rains, our residents then are very appreciative of it happening. Other times, they're just, you know, there's not a whole lot to see.
What's in it for you? What satisfaction do you get out of doing what you do? Obviously, running for re-election, you want to do it again.
Yes. This is my way of serving my country. You know, I wasn't a policeman, wasn't a fireman, wasn't in the military. You know, how does Ben Reynolds serve his country? And I think this is something that I'm very effective at doing. So this is my way of, you know, giving back or, you know, serving.
And, well, I guess we can leave it off talking about some citywide stuff before we let you go. We have so many major projects underway. The most visible is obviously the Civic Center redevelopment, but so much more than that. The airport, I mean, we can go on and on. The council, you've had a lot of really difficult, I'd say, discussions about these projects over the years, the budget, the time frame. How do you feel you guys are working together on that kind of thing? And do you feel like financially there are good enough guardrails put up by the city council to kind of keep things in a range that citizens are comfortable with, depending on whoever is in the next administration?
Well, to help drive that point home and make sure that we don't go backwards, the city council, I guess, probably 3 months ago, changed the ordinance regarding the reserves that are required. It was previously that you had to have 2 months reserves. We upped that to say 16.66% of our annual budget must be held in reserve, cash reserves.
Yeah.
So these big projects, they were planned. It should be no surprise that Mayor Stimson went 8 years and just in the previous council grinding away at debt, trying to get the finances right so that in those last 4 years you could check these big legacy boxes, you know, the new arena, airport, many other things. So it should be no surprise that that's the way it worked out. Now it's important for the next mayor, whoever they are, and the next city council, that we strictly adhere to our budget strategies that have been tremendously successful.
Yeah, first had to clean it up, clean everything up, and then you could begin to progress forward.
That's correct.
That's what Sandy did. Ben, thanks for sharing time with us this morning and our audience as well. I'm sure they appreciate the fact that you've come on and talking straight at them.
Yeah, and you have a website, obviously, too. Is it Reynolds for Mobile?
ReynoldsforMobile.com. And if you have a council-related issue, please give me a call or send me an email to council4@cityofmobile.org or give me a call at 251-208-7441. I want to hear from you.
Jeff Poore, the moderator of the Great Orange Beach debate last night. He tells us about that experience on the way next. Morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5 at 8:53.
Yeah, and this guy had a busy day yesterday. Jeff Poore joins us with the Jeff Poore Show on the way next. And had an interview with a sitting congressman that's running for Senate. And then last night, a hosting a pretty, I don't know, did it get contentious, the debate in Orange Beach with Jeff Boyd, the councilman, and incumbent Mayor Tony Kennan? Jeff, you were there. How was it last night?
It got contentious, for sure. Really at the end, and I didn't know what to expect. I mean, I knew Jeff Boyd somewhat. I didn't know his temperament, how he would react in this sort of setting. But he started throwing the punches probably about three quarters of the way through. And then, you know, Kennan responded. And I was telling people this, Kennan kind of has a reputation for being a hothead. But and if you're just a casual observer, you would have thought he got a little heated under the collar. But like on a Tony Kennan scale, I thought he handled himself pretty well.
Yeah, when you say that he started throwing the punches, you want to be careful with that analogy there.
Well, yeah.
Considering.
No, but it was obviously not literal punches.
Yes.
But it was there's a lot to ding someone on for their mayoral record of 14 years, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, you're vulnerable to that degree. But
sure.
What was kind of interesting, some of the stuff one of the Boyd was hitting him with, Kennan had a good retort. You voted for this when you were on the council. Why are you bringing it up now? You know, like the athletic complex down there, some of the traffic, the negotiations with the bridge and things of that sort. You voted for this. So, I mean, I don't know that there was a clear winner last night, but... It went a little different than I had expected.
Well, in your studies to moderate this debate, you were already very well aware of the city of Orange Beach and some of the big problems that the citizens may feel they have. How well do you feel you know Orange Beach now after studying up and then asking those questions last
Man,
night?
Man, it is a different world. Okay, so I'm a little Fairhope boy here going down there. It really is a different sort of political temperament in Orange Beach.
Yeah, because of the personalities or because of the issues?
Both. Well, obviously the issues because it's a beach town. I lived in Destin for a couple of years, and I get it. I know development and all of that is, you know, these beach communities and their municipal government. But the personalities are, you know, for Baldwin County, I was telling Senator Elliott, I mean, he's got a very diverse constituency when you look at it from a political standpoint, because it's just different sort of culture. Different sort of concerns, less concerned about this, more concerned about that. And you could see it. You could feel it in the room.
And it'll be interesting to see how that plays into the Senate race, you know, to kind of tie those two stories together. You have Barry Moore sitting AL1 congressman, and he represents those beaches now. But he's making the big run for Senate, and it was official yesterday, and he talked about it on your show. This could get interesting because, as Dan and I were discussing it, it feels like Steve Marshall's been in this race for a year now, at least, and he's got that Northern Alabama kind of name recognition. Barry Moore kind of fighting an uphill battle, I think, as he jumps in.
I don't know about that, and let me say this. I mean, meeting a city congressman's no small thing. He's got kind of a Freedom Caucus vibe that Steve Marshall doesn't have. Everything about Barry Moore, I mean, how many times have we discounted Barry Moore in the last 5 years? 2020, Jeff Colvin's outspent like 10-1, still wins that with a big number in that runoff in 2020, that COVID postponement. And then Jerry Carl, you had to look at it and think, well, the population's Mobile, Baldwin County. Sure, Barry, but Barry ran the table in the Wiregrass. Like, it was getting some of those boxes 90-10. It was incredible. And then peels off just enough in Baldwin County, where Jerry did very, very well still, and peels off just enough to win that Republican Party primary.
So you feel like there's a shot that Barry Moore can duplicate that sort of success statewide?
Yeah, I mean, he's a very good retail politician. I mean, you rope line and people go away feeling like they made a connection. There's like some intangibles there that really lend themselves, I think, that will apply statewide. Now, running for a statewide office versus a congressional seat's a lot different, and you've got to be really more strategic and targeted. But, people, like I said, they count Barry Moore out because he won't raise a lot of money. Maybe Club for Growth comes in at the last minute, but he somehow pulls it out.
You have a big show on the way today, Jeff. Mobile mayoral candidate Paul Prine at 9:30. You'll talk with Joey Clark from News Talk 93.1 at 10:30. And then former Congressman Parker Griffith in the third hour. We're looking forward to it.
Hey, thank you. Thank you for having me on.
You got it. Special guest this morning, Councilman Ben Reynolds. Thanks to Ben for coming in studio.
Yeah, and we'll do this all again tomorrow morning at 6 on Mobile Mornings right here on FM Talk 106.5.